Right now, though, it is time to bring in our good friends.
Yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today.
All right, it's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Look, we have tons of apples.
That's right. You know, you're funny you say that. We broadcast live from the Bargain Barn every Saturday, and we have these really terrific listeners that bring us the stuff they grow, and they've been bringing us apples the past couple of weeks.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. It's apple season.
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You eat what you have.
That's right.
And the trees have a lot of apples.
That's
So, and actually, I after a disastrous peach nectarine season and a mediocre melon season, no pun intended, no alliteration intended, really, I was so looking forward to the first fall apples, crisp, sweet, tart, whatever. They're great, and they don't stay great. You know, we think because apples are available all year long, a lot of them from the southern hemisphere, you know, like when it's not a season here, it's a season there. Hence, you know, I don't know. Granny Smith. You don't remember Granny Smith.
Oh, sure, I do.
Sure you do.
You don't, because they didn't exist until the 1950s.
Yeah, but on the farm that I lived on, there were several Granny Smith trees, and my grandmother used to use them all the time for all sorts of things.
You think they were Granny Smith or some other green apple?
No, they were Granny Smiths. They were Granny Smiths,
and
no doubt about it.
And this was in the
1950s. Late 50s.
Your grandmother was very forward.
late 50s. And we had Macintosh apples, and we had...
Well, Macs. You know, when I was a kid, Macs were the standard apple. And nowadays, it's delicious.
And we had crab apples.
And that's a shame, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, because Macs, I think, are a superior apple to... And Macs store well, so those are one of the apples that you can get decent in the middle of the winter in February.
We had crabapple trees, too.
Well, I have one right out my kitchen window, and I have to say that this year, the crabapples seem bigger than, I don't know, maybe ever, that since I'm here, and it's almost 20 years. So I would think it's a good apple season. The apples here in the farmer's market, including... A crab apple. My crab apples here, by the way, are not red yet, and they hardly ever get red. So I'm curious to see what's. They're clinging too. Pretty well. The tree is only starting to turn color. So who knows? Anyway, the apples here have been fabulous, and I've been. I like looking at apples. Forget eating apples. I don't feel so bad about buying more apples than I probably will eat right away. Because I like looking at them so much. And you can make up, with all the varieties that are available today, and at this time of the year, you can make up a really gorgeous bowl of apples. And then, of course, it's a better snack than almost anything. So if you get hungry, you can just grab an apple. Anyway, and they're good out of hand and great for cooking, but not all created equal. So I don't know. I remember... I had a neighbor in Cornwall who had an apple orchard, and I'm trying to think if there were any tall trees in that orchard, because his orchard was very old and actually had some today would be called heirloom varieties in it. And there are, by the way, more varieties of apples than of any other fruit. And one reason is the English, meaning the Brits, are obsessed with apples, and spend their whole lives crossbreeding apples to find the perfect apple for their orchard, for their taste, da-da-da-da-da, or maybe just out of ego to have an apple named after them. So the English have an enormous quantity of apples, and we owe our apples to them because they brought the apple trees with them. I think Dutch brought apple trees with them, too. In any case, the Hudson Valley is a prime apple growing region in the United States, and we have other apple in the Northwest. There are apple growing regions. I think most of the delicious apples that we get come from Washington. And as I said, in the winter, we're going to be getting apples from South Africa, Australia. You've got Braeburns and Galas and Granny Smiths that are now, you know, grown all, everywhere. So this week, I got down to a point, you know, I wrote a book called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat, and I am often at a point where I think, oh, there's nothing in the house to eat, but I did buy some sausage, went to a pork store that I hadn't been to in many years, but I was in the neighborhood, no need to mention it, it's here in Brooklyn. I remembered their pork sausage being particularly good, and they were very good. But I had nothing to serve with the pork sausage except apples and onions, which I love as a combination. I am now, by the way, out of apples and onions. So I've got to go shopping today. There really is not. Well, I could today if I had to eat pasta and chickpeas. That I always have in the house, too. So, and actually, I've been having an urge for it.
Have you ever made a pasta? Is it just a thought of this? But this wouldn't be for me, but if you took sausage, onions, and apples.
Great combo.
Yeah, as I
but
say.
I ate the apples and onions sautéed together. I'll tell you what I did in a second. Alongside the sausage. But, of course, every bite of sausage, I forked a piece of apple and a piece of onion, so that all three flavors were in my mouth at the same time. There are other ways you could combine them. I mean, in fact, I was thinking maybe I should take the sausage out of the casing.
Yeah, and
which
then,
I often do,
and then have broccoli wrap on
the side. I didn't know the quality exactly of this sausage in the casing, so I didn't want. Anyway, I like to do that with coarsely cut or ground sausage. I don't usually like to do that with supermarket sausage. As good as some of those brands taste, I don't really like what's in them. Look at the ingredients.
Oh, I know. And there's also, I have a consistency thing, which unfortunately came
and
from.
And they're too mushy for me.
Yeah, it came from a visit to the hot dog factory when I was young.
Well, hot dogs, you know. Exactly. You know, well, they always say that about legislation. You know, it's like a sausage factory. You don't want to watch it being done. So that's where that metaphor comes from. It's really not pleasant making sausage. Well, I don't know. I've made sausage in my life, and when you're making it yourself, it doesn't seem so gross.
I'm fine once I've got the. You know, just give me the sausage.
But anyway, the point we were trying to make is that yeah, you could take some sausage out of the casing, I would think, let's say I had one medium-ish apple and two small apples. This is what I had in the house. And I had one medium red onion and a half of a yellow onion. So I just used up what I had. You know, these proportions are what you have or how much you need. The two of us ate this, but I would say it was certainly enough for three and maybe even four, depending on appetites, as they say, or used to say. Anyway, I just made my sausage the way I always make my sausage. I served this next to it. So I used butter. But if I was using the sausage, I would eliminate butter. I would cook the sausage meat in the pan without any oil. No need. The sausage has plenty of fat. And it would render some of the fat. And when the sausage loses its raw color, I would then throw in the onion. Now, important how you cut these things, I think. So I cut my onions. I'm careful not to disturb the root end, except to cut off the actual roots. And then I cut the onion into wedges through the root end so that the root end holds almost all the wedges together. You're going to lose some wedges and you'll just get, you know, slight wedge-shaped slices of onion, but that's okay. But some of them will cling together and it makes a nice
It's attractive.
A mix of textures in the end. Pardon me?
I said that's actually good. It's attractive, and it is a mix of textures, and that's
yeah, mix of textures. So then I sauteed the onion just a few minutes until, you know, over reasonably high heat. So I used butter. I didn't want the butter to burn, but I did want the onion to wilt a little bit, and start to color a little bit. So I had it on reasonably high heat. And then as soon as I saw any color on the onions, I put in the apples. Because the apples, which are moist, are going to stop the cooking of the onions. You won't burn anything. and eventually they will get colored too. So the apples, now if all my apples were small, I would have just cut them into wedges the same, core them, peel them, and cut them into wedges the same as you did the onions. But since I had this bigger apple, which wasn't going to cut into nice wedges, I decided to cut the apples in half and then cut them into thick slices. I mean thick, like at least a half an inch. Because I don't want the apples to turn to mush in the pan. In the end, I want the outside of the apple to be a little caramelized. By the way, I do sprinkle some salt, but only a little bit, over the onions. You don't really need it on the apples, but just before you add the apples, you can salt the onions, and then add the apples. They won't be as salty as the onions, but they'll get a little salt. And then you've got to stand by the pan. It takes about 10 minutes on medium heat to get the apples to start coloring and the onions to get well wilted. And I can make this ahead of time. You don't need to even serve it hot. You can just serve it at room temperature on the side. But if you want it hot, then you just reheat it over medium-high heat, because you don't want it to simmer together. You just want it to heat it through. And you have to toss it as you're reheating it. And that's it. That was so good. Now, because my computer is acting up this morning, and also it was so long ago that I can't remember where to find it exactly, I used to make, years ago, I'm talking 30 years ago, a quiche with apples and onions. And I think you could just take sort of any quiche recipe, meaning the egg and cream, it's a custard, proportions, like take look at Julia Child and see what she did, and pour that over your sautéed apples and onions in a crust, if you really want, or you could just do it in a well-greased pie plate, and then it'll just be a custard that you can cut into wedges. You could, if you want, line the pie plate with breadcrumbs. So, and that's it. And then you bake it, and it's a side dish, but you could also eat it for lunch, after all. And I remember I added cheese to it, too. You could even add a little cheddar. It would be great cheese for apples and onions. So it would be a real New England kind of quiche. Apples, onions, cheddar cheese. I want to eat that now. I could eat it for breakfast, couldn't I?
Yeah, you could.
Could you?
No, because no.
What does it have that you won't eat?
Well, either an
don't start.
It's either the apple. The apple.
Oh, please.
I understand. So anyway, yeah, don't start. Or put
apple cake. How are you on apple cake?
Love apple cake.
Mm. So why don't you like apples? I'm just curious. What is it that happens to the apples in an apple cake? Or apple pie. How are you on apple pie?
Love apple pie.
So what's
love
the
apple
problem?
Crisp.
You just won't eat a raw apple?
Oh, no, I'll eat a raw apple.
Oh,
I'm back to apple quiche. I thought that's what you were asking.
Oh, the apple quiche. Well, it's not apple. It's apple and onion. It's savory.
That's the problem.
It has a little bit of sweet, but it's really savory.
I have never been able to get all of the sweet out of apple. I'm a nightmare. That's all.
You are a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I ran across a recipe over the weekend when my computer was working perfectly. that I actually bookmarked to make. I may actually have to go get it out of the cookbook it came from, which I believe is a Patricia Wells cookbook. A Taste of Paris. Now I'm remembering, and I'm sure I have that somewhere. Well, I know where it is. And it's for this apple. I only want to call it a thingy. It doesn't really qualify as cake, although I do believe it's called cake. And it's another one you won't like, probably. But it's apparently dense with apples, and there's some flour and cream, and it all comes out sort of like, according to what I read on the internet on this website, a cross between clafouti, which I don't usually like, and cake. So I might like this. My problem with clafouti, You know what clafouti is?
Yes.
Yeah. I'll tell everybody. Clafouti is a kind of custard, but it's made with flour, and the classic one is made with cherries. And I find it very stodgy. But nowadays it's made with all kinds of fruit. I find it very stodgy and not my favorite thing at all. I mean, if somebody in their house made one and served it to me, I'd say, oh, how nice. But in fact, you know, I would never make one. I've made them enough times to know that I don't like it. But this sounded really good. And I don't know, I haven't, there are two things I have an affinity for, I find, by looking through my old cookbooks, is that almost every book has an apple something, if not an apple cake, an apple dessert. I love apples. And every book has some kind of lentils, and usually with pasta of some kind. So, and I do love lentils, and I still, with nothing in the house to eat, I always have lentils.
This the Apple Lady's apple cake?
That's it. You found it. Because yes. Your computer's working.
That's why I found it.
Yeah, it's all over the internet, by the way. It's apparently a very popular recipe because it's so simple. I mean, the only work involved here is peeling and coring apples. Speaking of which...
Do you have a corer?
Pardon me?
I'm just wondering, do you have a corer? One of my favorite
gadgets. I was just about
gadgets.
To say.
Okay.
Two of my favorite kitchen gadgets, or tools, I should call them tools, they're not gadgets, really, is my OXO apple peeler and apple corer. And I was looking at the corer this morning. I use it all the time. I never think about it, twice about it. But it's not marked. But then I realized it has to be OXO because OXO has these distinctive ergonomic large rubber, black rubber handles that have a soft, like a gill kind of thing in the rubber near the part of the tool you're using, the blade, to accommodate your forefinger and thumb. And this handle was invented to accommodate people with arthritis. And they discovered that even people without arthritis enjoyed the handle. And I have a lot of OXO products, including my tea kettle is an OXO. It's one of the few whistling tea kettles that you can also, has a cover, you can look inside. I like to look inside. Believe it or not, go to the store, you'll see a lot of the whistling tea kettles. You can't look inside.
I know, which is annoying.
Not that I do look inside very often.
But you should be able to.
You should be able to, right. Especially, I live in New York City where the water is very soft. But when I lived in the Northwest Corner and the water was very mineralized, everything inside would need to be demineralized from time to time, pretty often, actually.
No, I was making tea at somebody's house this weekend, I was literally having a fight with the... It had at one time you could open it, so I'm a big proponent of being able to open it.
Yeah, almost. So the OXO is also has this nice, you know, easy-to-grasp rubber handle. I also have, and I thought today maybe I should go to my favorite cookware store here in Brooklyn and see what they say, but years ago I bought an OXO peeler that comes with high carbon blades that are interchangeable. So when your high carbon blade gets not so sharp, you can change it out. It's like a razor blade. You can change it out for a new blade. And it came with three or four blades, but I'm down to my last one, and I'm not sure it's so sharp anymore. The other day I was thinking, as I was peeling apples, that the cheapo plastic one that I have is working better than the expensive high-carbon steel knife one, but I'm wondering if I can't get some new blades. It has the same, by the way, it has the same easy-to-hold handle.
And did you ever have a hand crank one?
No, there are times when I think, oh, wouldn't it be fun to have one of those spiral cutters?
That's what
but, you know, I don't really do enough apples ever, you know, like, so I make a big cake, I have to do a couple pounds of apples or something, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So, the lady, what is it called?
It is called Apple Lady Apple Cake. The apple lady.
If I recall, I have all the ingredients in the house except for the 2 pounds of apples it calls for.
All right. And the ingredients are half a cup of all-purpose flour.
Got that.
A third of a cup of sugar.
Got that.
1 tablespoon baking powder.
Always have that.
1/8 teaspoon fine sea salt.
Got that.
1/2 teaspoon pure vanilla extract.
Got that.
2 large eggs, lightly beaten.
Always.
2 tablespoons vegetable oil.
Got it.
1/2 cup of whole milk.
Oh, right. It wasn't even cream. And got that. That was another reason I wanted to make it.
Right. 4 baking apples.
Who doesn't
apples?
Have all those ingredients in their house? And 2 pounds of apples.
Right. And then the topping is 1/3 of a cup of sugar, large egg, lightly beaten, 3 tablespoons unsalted butter, melted.
That intrigued me. You bake this cake or pudding, whatever you want to call it, in a springform pan, if I recall. And at some point, like 45 minutes into the baking, you put on this topping of butter, sugar, and egg. Right?
Yep. About 25 minutes into it, I think.
25 minutes. Well,
you preheat the oven. It's 400 degrees Fahrenheit. It's a 9-inch springform pan. You butter it.
Yep.
You make the mixture. You put the mixture into the cake pan.
The mixture is just those ingredients you read off. You just mix it all together.
Right.
With 2 pounds of apples, peeled, cored, and cut into wedges.
Right. And then move the cake from the oven and pour the topping mixture over it.
Uh-huh.
Return the cake to the oven and bake until the top is a deep golden brown and the cake feels quite firm when pressed.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really good.
About 10 minutes.
You know, I experiment more these days than I used to. I do cook other people's food.
And then,
but that struck me. I think actually I first saw it on Facebook.
And
somebody posted it as something that's one of her go-to recipes.
And this note from Patricia Wells I'm going to read, and it says, when you make this cake, you will be surprised by the small amount of batter, the quantity of apples. In effect, this is more of a crustless pie, in that the batter is just there to hold the apples together.
I love it.
What I love most, Patricia Wells, about this recipe is that it allows the full flavor of the apple to shine through. And you can
all
see
right,
why.
Which brings us to the apples. What apple do you use? Does she recommend one?
She uses bada bada bada.
Remember, she lives in France.
Right. Okay.
I don't know how if her recipes are ever tested in the U.S., but apparently, whatever apple you use, it's okay. I would think you would not want to use a Macintosh, which is a very common apple, because they get extremely mushy soft. I think you want something that's going to hold its shape reasonably well. And I think the easiest to find would be Golden Delicious. And when you buy Golden Delicious, I've used this indicator for many years, and it's served me well. I like the ones that look a little speckled, and the skin not so perfect and smooth. Mm-hmm. And I somehow find those are sweeter. But Golden Delicious is not a delicious apple. I mean, it is, but it has totally different qualities, and it has a much tighter, crisper flesh, and it's reasonably sweet, but it's not altogether sweet. It has a little tart edge, and it holds its shape reasonably well. I've been cooking a lot with Crispins, but I find the quality of Crispins varies dramatically. So unless you have a really good source of Crispins, which is also called Mutsu, Japanese name, but I do find they're a good cooking apple. I particularly like them for making baked apples, which, as the season goes on, in the winter, that's my go-to dessert in this house is baked apples. And I do very, very simple. I just I core them. I peel off the top third, only the top third of the skin, and I put them in a baking dish. Oh, well, first for each apple, you're going to need 2 teaspoons of turbinado sugar. You know, it's by brand name, there's sugar in the raw.
Right.
But but there are many other. Actually, I go to a Caribbean store near me that has particularly good and very inexpensive what they call Jamaican brown sugar, but it's turbinado sugar. Anyway, I put the sugar in a little bowl, and I put the tops of the apples into the sugar, and I push it in, and that's enough sugar for the whole thing. And I line up all the apples in the dish, and on the bottom of the dish, not over the apples, you don't want to moisten the top of the apple, in the dish, I put some dry vermouth or white wine, depending what's open. You know, there's always some dry vermouth around for a martini, so there's always dry vermouth around. Not always nice white wine, but sometimes. And that's it. And I bake them in the oven. They usually, even a medium apple will take about almost an hour. And a larger apple, a little, it depends on how soft you like them, too. If you like them totally mushy, then you leave them in longer. It also depends on the kind of apple. If you put a Mac in there, it's probably only going to take 45 minutes, and then it's going to be applesauce. If you put a Yellow Delicious in there, it could take an hour. But there's an apple called a Rome Beauty, R-O-M-E, named for Italy's Rome, but named for, and not even Rome, New York. It's like Rome, Ohio, where this apple was developed. And it was my mother's baking apple, and they're very large, and I don't like them for eating at all, but they make great baking apples, and I do the same thing with them, except you probably need a little bit more than 2 teaspoons of sugar per apple. And by the way, if you have any extra sugar left after smooshing the sugar into the top of the apple, you can just sprinkle it around the bottom. And at the end, that wine is going to turn to syrup. And you don't have to baste, but if you want to after about, you know, like almost when they're finished, but not quite, you can baste them with the syrup. And certainly, when they come out of the oven, it's very nice to baste them with the syrup that's left in the bottom of the pan, because that'll make a nice shiny top to the apples.
Oh, yum.
I think my time is up.
I think it's perfect. You are a pro, but we knew that.
Well, we try.